Thank you, Jack, and thank you, everybody. It's great to be here with you today. I think it's been very edifying for me to be here. Jay, I appreciate very much your class this morning, and Ed's talk during the Lord's Supper was very edifying. These are things from the New Testament that we need and that we assuredly have been upheld with this morning already. Now I'd like to go back to the Old Testament just for a few minutes and talk about a lesson from there that Sam has already read from the last chapter of the book of Proverbs. Proverbs gives us vertical wisdom for horizontal living. It's the single most practical book in all the Bible. The book of Psalms shows us how to get along with God. The book of Proverbs shows us how to get along with people. If you have any conflicts with people, the chances are you'll find in Proverbs insights that you need for your part of the solution. In Proverbs 31, we see what God desires as the ultimate godly woman. This passage does not present a particular woman, but the ideal of womanhood. I'm not sure if any woman actually lives up to all of this, although I've known some that I thought came very close to it. But this is the ideal. This is the goal of a woman, a wife, a mother. There are a number of women represented in the book of Proverbs. Chapter 31 is definitely not the first time in Proverbs that women have been the subject. Earlier chapters have described some women who were anything but excellent. We have the adulteress who flatters with her lips and forsakes her husband and breaks her marriage covenant. We have the noisy woman and the foolish woman and the rebellious woman and the quarrelsome woman and other assorted less than ideal women. But mine was the privilege of being raised at the knee of a godly woman, and I think it's appropriate for us to discuss that subject. When we get to chapter 31, we have the picture of God's standard for womanhood. Lemuel is mentioned here. Lemuel may have been Solomon. I don't know for sure. I'll let the scholars argue about that. But whoever he is, whether Solomon or not, he is a king, and his mother is speaking to him. It seems that he is a young king. In general, kings became kings when their fathers died, even if they were very young. So she starts off by saying, "What, my son? What, son of my womb? What, son of my vows? What is my message to you?" And the message she gives her son is all about character. She starts off in verse 3 and says, "Do not give your strength to women." This is a euphemism referring to sexual immorality. In verse 4, "It is not for kings to drink wine, lest they drink and forget what is decreed." But there is a place for strong drink. "Give strong drink," verse 6, "to him that is perishing." In other words, alleviate the suffering of the dying with anesthesia. Not long ago, I told a nurse in a hospice, I don't see any downside to some more morphine for this woman who was laying in the bed. There is a place for the things that God has given us. "Give strong drink to him that is perishing." Meet the needs of hurting people. Verse 7, "Open your mouth for the dumb. Speak in defense of those who can't speak for themselves, for those who are mute or otherwise cannot speak for themselves. Give yourself for the rights of the unfortunate." This is good for kings. It's good for all of us to know. And so far, these things cover a lot of life, but they only occupy 9 verses. The rest of the chapter is about one other critical area of advice. Look for that choice woman among all the gems of the earth. Verse 10, "An excellent wife, who can find?" Who can find a virtuous woman? The word for wife and woman were the same in the Hebrew, depending on context. If you marry, find an excellent wife, as if this is among the most important priorities of all. And it is. The right partner for life monumentally enriches the life of a man and his children and all the generations to come. Her worth is far above jewels. That word could mean pearls. She is a pearl of great price. The King James translates it as rubies. It's a generic word meaning jewels, because in the ancient world, gold and jewels were the measures of value. What unfolds in the rest of the chapter are the features of the godly woman: her character as a wife, her devotion as a homemaker, her generosity as a neighbor, her influence as a teacher, her effectiveness as a mother, and her excellence as a saint. These are the qualities for young men to look for. These are the qualities for young women to emulate. These are the things for husbands to thank God for. These are the guidelines for wives. And from verses 10 through 31, it's 22 verses. This is important because there are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet: Aleph, Beit, Gimel, Dalet, and so forth. Verse 10 begins with the letter Aleph. Verse 11 begins with the letter Beit. Verse 12 begins with the letter Gimel, and so on through the entire Hebrew alphabet of 22 letters over 22 verses. Why was this done? It was done for the sake of memory. All you had to know was the Hebrew alphabet, and virtually everybody knew the Hebrew alphabet among the Jews. And knowing the Hebrew alphabet would trigger in your mind each of these statements once you knew that each of these verses started with a succeeding letter of the Hebrew alphabet. You would have a full-length portrait of the ideal woman in your mind. Back in chapter 19, verse 14, it was said that a prudent wife is from the Lord. Not always easy to find. And by the way, it's just as hard to find a good man as it is a good woman. Proverbs 20, verse 6 said, "A faithful man who can find." An excellent wife is more valuable than practically anything else. Verse 11 says, "The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her." The most important relationship in the home is the relationship between the husband and the wife. That's the relationship that reflects itself to the children. The most important element in this relationship is trust. That's what holds relationships together. If you have a man who is able to trust his wife, this is the kind of a woman who allows her husband to do his work at home or when he's gone. This allows him to give himself to the career that he has to provide for his family. He can go away from her with absolute confidence in her integrity, in her discretion, in her discernment, in her care for all of his interests. He will trust her to take care of the home, to take care of the children, to care for all of their resources, for all of their assets, and to deal with all the responsibilities of the home. His comfort is her concern, and he knows it. His burdens are hers to bear, and he knows it. He is at ease in his absence because he knows that everything he has is safe with her. His house is the home of his heart because his heart is at rest with his wife. He's not suspicious, he's not worried, he's not jealous because he knows she's trustworthy. Some husbands in ancient times when they left home had to lock up everything that was physically valuable. That would be tantamount today to a man having to take all the credit cards with him when he left the house to be sure that while he was gone, she was not going to be spending them into serious bankruptcy as she wasted away their family resources. But this woman that we're talking about here has the character of a steward. She has an appreciation for the resources of the family. She is frugal. She's wise. She has discretion about what she does with the resources available to her. And she is sure to increase her husband's trust in her. And that trust builds a strong and it builds a lasting relationship. Once trust is breached, you will have suspicion in a marriage. And then no matter what really goes on, there's a residual suspicion. Once you have breached trust, there is reason for distrust in the future. And distrust eats at a relationship like cancer. But this man in Proverbs 31 is able to trust his wife. And verse 11 says he will have no lack of gain. He's not going to lose what he's earned. He doesn't have to worry about what's going to happen to his resources. There's a very special word that's used in 1 Timothy 5:14 to describe the role of a woman. And that is that she is the guide of the house. She has charge over the assets of the house, and her husband trusts her. He will never suffer a lack because of her abuse of that trust. She helps him to profit, and she is scrupulous, and she is careful. She doesn't put pressure on him to have to lie, cheat, and steal in order to cover her spending. In verse 12, it says that she will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She is consumed with his best interest. She is consumed with building him up all her life, in good times and in bad times. As the marriage vows say, in sickness and in health, in joy and in sorrow. She never does him any evil. She seeks his good, like Abigail did for her fool husband Nabal in 1 Samuel chapter 25. Criticizing your husband in public is never appropriate. If there are problems to be dealt with, there are other, better ways. All she does as the years go by is build his trust, and it's easy to love somebody you trust. She serves him as Sarah served Abraham, calling him Lord. She reveals her affection for him and her love for him by her consistent stewardship, consistent service on his behalf. And her love is so deep that it has a purity to it. It has a power to it. It has a devotion to it that never changes. She is consumed with his comfort, his success, his reputation. She wants him to be joyful and happy. She's never unkind and never chafing against that responsibility. She is submissive in the most gracious way. She is the protector of her husband, just as he is her protector as well. She advances her husband's respect. Verse 23 says that her husband is known in the gates, and he is known in the gates as her husband. All those husbands who gather together in the gates in ancient times, where the elders of the city talk about the issues of the day, all those guys that are there who don't have wives like this are envious of him. He is the one who sits in the gates and is known as the husband of so-and-so. When he sits among the elders of the land and they talk about domestic matters, he is the one who has the envy of others who are not so blessed. She advances her husband's respect, her husband's nobility with the leaders of the city. And because she is so faithful to the duties of the home, to the duties of her love for her husband, he is free to go out and be all the man that he can be. He becomes the man that he should be because she frees him from the encumbrance of worry and fear to be all that he can be. She's part of the reason he does a great job. The counterexample of this would be Jezebel in 1 Kings chapter 21. Pretty much when you read the story of Jezebel, you can just say that everything Jezebel does, do the opposite if you're a woman. In verses 13 through 24, these develop her devotion as a homemaker. The technology has changed, of course, but the direction of the devotion is the same. It's still God's design today that the woman give herself away in the home to her husband and her children. She's the guide of the house. That's the domain of the woman. That's the sphere of her duty and her responsibility. Verse 13 says she seeks wool and flax. She's working with raw materials to enhance the home. Her godly virtue doesn't show up immediately here in some obviously spiritual enterprise. We don't find her immediately giving herself over to some ministry or the other, which allows irresponsibility and laziness in the home. There's no place in her life for self-indulgent laziness. She's a homemaker. Her husband trusts her in that. She works with her hands from the delight of her heart. She loves it for the pure goodness of it. She does it with joy. Verse 14 says she's like the merchant ship. She bringeth her ship, her food from afar. This doesn't mean that she drives 20 extra miles to save a nickel on a can of beans. In those days, of course, they didn't drive a vehicle. But every locale in those days had a staple diet that was for that particular area. And what they grew was what they ate. And the climate might be a little bit different somewhere else nearby, and they could grow things there that they couldn't grow where you live. So if you wanted to bring variety into your diet of your family, you had to go to some other locale and get what they were growing over there. And that's what he's talking about here. She would go and get things from other places just for the joy and the well-being of her family. She made meals that were creative. She went on foot to get things as special delights for her family to enjoy. Verse 15 says, she arises also while it is yet night. She would get up before dawn and grind the corn for the day's meals. She's up doing whatever she needs to do. She feeds her girls, her helpers, whether these are her daughters or her servant girls. She didn't have a refrigerator and canned goods that are readily accessible and easily available today. Since we don't have to do now all the laborious tasks that filled the days of the ancient people, we're even freer to use our creativity to enrich and enhance the home with the things that we do have. She is just the guide of the house. Verse 16 says she considers a field and she buys it. She sees what can add to the economy of the family and buys it and plants a vineyard there. Where'd she get the money for that? Verse 16 says, from her earnings. It's as if she has a cottage industry, as we might say today. Verse 24 says, she makes linen garments and she sells them. She supplies belts to the tradesmen. The Phoenicians were a seagoing people who literally took the trade from the east and scattered it all over the west. In the Mediterranean countries. She was producing goods and selling them. She had some girls who helped her with this. So that's why I say it's a cottage industry. Her husband was the provider, and that was enough to live on, but she takes what she makes and she sets it aside consistently until she can assist the family. She's a very enterprising lady. She develops new opportunities. She's making wise investments on behalf of her family. And when she sows in hope. She looks carefully at one of God's most priceless gifts, and that is her time and the use of it. Verse 17 says, she girds herself with strength, and she makes her arms strong. She's full of energy. She is physically healthy. She is strongly committed to her duties. She works for the good of others, and that's how she strengthens herself. Her health is strengthened by her walk and by her work. Her strength is the result of diligently giving herself away to her household. Verse 18 says that she senses that her gain is good. She is motivated by the sheer goodness of it. She's spurred on by the inherent goodness of what she does in her role in life. And that's why her lamp goeth not out by night. It's so good that she does it even after dark sets in. Sometimes a year that's pretty mandatory when it gets dark at 4 or 5 o'clock. But this would be true all year long. Her candle goeth not out by night. Here's a woman who's doing what she does heartily as to the Lord and not just to men. She gives herself away to her husband and children. Verse 19 picks up on the idea of the flax and the wool from verse 13. She stretches out her hand to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. She takes the raw material, she spins that into thread, she weaves that into cloth, and then cuts it up and sews it into garments. She is motivated by the goodness of all of this. Verse 21 says that she's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She's not afraid of the winter because she's prepared ahead for winter. Like it was said earlier in the book of Proverbs in chapter 6, go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. They didn't have central heating, but she was ready for the cold anyway. Verse 22, she maketh coverings for herself, both clothing and beds, pillows, mattresses, bedspreads, blankets, covering. When those women made a bed, they made a bed. They made the mattress before they made the rest of the bed. God made us to appreciate beauty, and this woman, it seems, made a lovely bed. There's no ostentation here. There's nothing about overdoing it, but she is refined as a homemaker. She is generous as a neighbor in verse 20. She extends her hands to the poor. She stretcheth forth her hands to the needy. This is like the widow, age 60 or above, that Paul said could go on the list in the church, one who cared about others, widows and orphans. This is a woman who is sacrificial. She is compassionate. And God has given woman a special capacity for compassion. She is the mother of the race. She is more highly emotionally keyed than the average man. Her heart is moved for the person in need. Thank God for that in your wife. When you find a woman who cannot cry, this is in some cases rather disturbing. Look for this compassion when you look for the godly woman. We also see her influence as a teacher. Not only in the first part of the chapter, these are the words that Lemuel's mother taught him, but in verses 25 and 26, we see it again. Strength and dignity are her clothing. If you're going to be a teacher, you have to start with character. Far more important than what you say is what you are. She is clothed with spiritual strength. She is clothed with unwavering, uncompromising resolve. She is consistent. She's strong. She doesn't fall to temptation. She doesn't vacillate. She doesn't waver. She is dignified. She is elevated above the common. This is not a woman like every other woman. This woman rises above in terms of her character. She has a noble fortitude about her. Her life is above the standard of most people. And verse 25 says she smiles at the future. She looks not just at the crosses that she may have to bear in life, but at the marvelous investment of her time. If you live a godly life, you can look at the future and smile, as has already been said today, because of that Christian hope. In this case, this woman, her character, her virtue, the consistency of her spiritual commitment mean that she can look at the future and have no fear. She's pure, she's faithful, she delights in giving her life away to those of her family and by extension to those of the church and her neighbors. She looks at the future and she smiles because she knows what the return is going to be on that investment. She has planned well. And having that character as a foundation, verse 26 says that she opens her mouth in wisdom. She opens her mouth in wisdom and her family listens to her, and other people listen to her because they know what she is. One time I heard somebody say to somebody else, he said, what you are speaks so loudly, I can't hardly hear what you say. That's really true sometimes. But in the case of the godly woman, you want to listen to her when she opens her mouth because you know where her words are coming from. Her character is her credibility. She opens her mouth in wisdom. And this is what Proverbs 1:8 said back at the beginning of this book. It calls it the law of your mother. Listen to the law of your mother. The law of kindness is on her tongue. What does she teach? She teaches kindness, grace, mercy, gentleness, compassion. And she teaches it because she lives it. She teaches the things that are manifest in her character. We come to the blessedness of this woman as a mother in verses 27 and 28. She takes care of her family, and here comes that blessedness back to her again. Her children arise up, and they call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. She's made an investment that brings that return. She has so trustingly given her life to her husband that he praises her. He is comfortable in being transparent with her. He can share his disappointments, his victory. He can unload his insecurities with her. He knows she will keep his confidence. She is indeed a help meet for him. He finds in her the corresponding parts that are missing in himself, so that between the two of them, nothing is missing. So that he can move on to the fulfillment of his potential, and in this way, she is fulfilled as well. As her children have their own children, they try to raise them the way that she raised them. They internalized her example, and then they live it out in the next generation. And her husband rejoices in that, and he praises her. Undergirding all of this is her excellence as a saint of God. It comes here at the end of the chapter, but it starts at the beginning of life. So that it is said, as has already been mentioned today when Sam read this in verse 30, charm is deceitful. Form, figure, beauty is vain. They mean nothing in the big scheme of things. Form and face have no real value, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. So give her the product of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates. Give her back the good that comes out of her hands to others and let her receive the praise that she deserves. This kind of woman sets a very high standard, and God's standard never changes. This is what every Christian woman, wife, and mother needs to set as the ideal and ask God for the grace to pursue it. So if you're looking at your life today, either as a man or a woman, and you find yourself saying, I've been going in the wrong direction, today is a good day to start going in the right direction. God is the God of new beginnings. It's His grace that gives us a new place to start. This Bible is the path for you to walk in. Women who belong to Christ can set this as a goal and move toward it, just as men who belong to Christ need to set godly living as a goal and continue to move toward it. If someone with us today is outside of Christ and has never come to Jesus in simple trusting faith, we would extend you an invitation and an opportunity at this time to believe that Jesus is who He claimed to be. Repent of your sins, meaning turning from them and going in a different direction in life. Repenting of your sins, you confess Him before people, like this audience gathered here today, and allow yourself to be taken and dipped or immersed in water for the remission of sins, that you may rise and walk in a new life and start going in a godly direction. I know there's at least one person here today who's never been with us before, but there are many who have been with us a number of times, who may need to obey the Lord in primary obedience. If this is your day, then we would invite you, or for any other reason that you need to bring something publicly before the congregation. As we stand and sing the invitation number, please come forward to one of these front seats and let us know how we can help you.